Welcome to the WR Immigration Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hello, Mr. Oppenheim. It's a great pleasure to see you today. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for accepting the position of Director of Visa Control. It's really a pleasure to have you on the WR team.
It's my pleasure.
So, Charlie, you recently retired from your position as Director of Visa Control for the State Department. You held that position for 23 years, and during that time, you were responsible for the issuance of all the numerically controlled visas. Approximately how many visas were issued during that time period?
During my time as Chief of the Immigrant Visa Control and Reporting Division at the Department of State, the decisions I made resulted in over 9 million numerically controlled visas being issued or green cards issued on a worldwide basis.
Wow. That would be all of the numerically controlled visas other than the immediate relative category, right? Other than the spouse, parent, or minor child of a U.S. citizen, that's every single immigrant visa, right?
Exactly. And each one of those 9 million had the potential to be eventually file for additional immigrant applicants.
So, Charlie, let me understand. The way you worked that and the way that was done is through the visa bulletin, right? You were responsible for the visa bulletin, and every month you would come up with the numbers for the next month. And that would be sort of a roadmap for the entire world, quite frankly, in order to understand where they are on the waiting line. Is that pretty much what the visa bulletin does? And is that the document that we get, travel.state.gov, every month around the middle of the month, they would publish for the next month? Is that correct?
Yes, it is. We use the visa bulletin to let the public know what visa availability would be in the upcoming month, and also try to give them other visa-related information in that bulletin so that they wouldn't be caught off guard. If we saw some trend happening that may affect number use or the availability of numbers in future months, we try to use the visa bulletin as a vehicle to give them some advance warning so that nobody would be caught off guard.
Very helpful. So from a practical point of view, if I was the human resource manager of a large company and we had a shortage, for example, in tech, computer science engineers, I would be able to calculate approximately if I hired this individual from India, from China, or from another country in the rest of the world, I would be able to predict with some certainty how long it would take for them to get a green card, which is really important because many of them would be on H-1B visas or L-1 visas, and one would have to calculate how much time it takes to get the green card. Is this an accurate summary of what the employment-based categories would do?
Yes, you're exactly right. The applicants could, or HR managers, could look at chart A in the visa bulletin, and that would tell them who's eligible to be processed in the upcoming month. They could also look at chart B, and they could look there and see where the visa office feels that the application or the final action dates will be in approximately 8 to 12 months. So they can look at those dates and say, 12 months down the road, this is the date that will be applicable to the applicants which I'm interested in.
So that's an amazing, very interesting system, because some people are confused between the final action date, chart A, and the date for filing, chart B. So the first one is the actual cutoff date or final action date. Now, in order to obtain a final action date, one would have to, or a chart B, date for action, date for filing, one would actually have to file your petition. So in the employment context, that is either filing your I-140 immigrant visa petition or your Department of Labor PERM application. And that would be your place in the waiting line, the so-called ticket, like when you go to Popular Deli or something, you have to pull the little red ticket. That's your number. And then you wait for your number to get called. Is that pretty much how it works and how the system operates?
Yes, it is. Based on the number of people that are in line, there's a certain amount of visas available on an annual basis, and those numbers are divided up into monthly basis. And we would allow the people with the earliest, quote, ticket numbers to proceed and be processed in the upcoming month.
So, Charlie, let's take a look. The Immigration Act of 1990 basically allocated 140,000 visas for the employment category. There is a 7% limitation for each country. That's been quite controversial because big countries don't get more, but we're not going to get into politics today. We just want to get into how does this system work? So every country would be entitled to up to 7% of that 140,000. And then sometimes there will be unused visas from the family category, which will fall over. And my understanding is that for fiscal 23, which is what we're moving into, there were almost 60,000 visas carrying over. Is that more or less accurate? So we have approximately 200,000 family employment visas with the 60,000 from family. Is that more or less accurate, Charlie?
Yes, it is. And based on that approximately 200,000, you would apply the 7% limit. And that was applied. Basically, Congress wanted to say, we don't want certain countries to monopolize the vast majority in numbers. So we'll kind of give an equal share based on the 7% limit. And then if there are still numbers available, they can be made available to countries which have already reached their 7% limit.
So that would be the rest of the world. So it for the big users, and let's just be direct, in the employment category, you're talking about India and you're talking about China, and then they would get 7% of, for this year, approximately 200,000. But then they would also get the leftovers from other countries that are unused, and that would be allocated. So it's not quite as bad as 7% of the total allocation, because many countries don't use their full quotas.
Exactly. Year in and year out, both China and India in the employment categories receive far more than the 7% limit. They receive thousands of additional numbers over and above their annual limits.
Well, at least it's not as unfair, but it's not strictly based on first come, first served. There is this per country limitation. So, Charlie, let's drill down a little bit on the specific employment categories. And we're going to start off with the first preference priority workers. My understanding is that they receive approximately 28.6, so just under 30% of the total allocation of this 200,000 goes to the employment categories. And for this reason, the employment categories are inevitably the best in the sense that they are current for almost all countries. We note that China and India do now have a final action date, but let's put it this way, it's not that serious. I don't want to get into the weeds on this, but clearly, if I was an immigrant and potentially eligible for first preference, I would absolutely want to choose this category, because besides the first preference and the EB-5 investor category, these are the only categories which are, let's put it this way, relatively short waiting lines, even for India and China. Is that an accurate assessment, sir?
Yes, exactly. The employment categories are the best for people to be able to apply. If you compare the wait times in employment versus the family-sponsored categories, there's basically no comparison in those wait times. And the employment first preference for recent years has been current for most applicants for considerable amounts of time, and the employment first preference final action dates typically, even for countries such as China and India who have a final action date in that category, will typically move faster than the other categories.
Very good. So because that's because they get 30%. And but let's stop for a second, put on my lawyer hat. First preference priority worker is the EB1A category, extraordinary ability, art, science, business, education, or sports. That's a very high threshold. And then you have the EB1B, outstanding professor, researcher. So, and then finally, the EB1C, which is the company transfer category. So, putting this on a broad perspective, if you are in academics or research, or you're a world-class athlete, for example, and you really have to be the top of the top, or you're a very senior manager in a large corporation. So if you, let's take a Fortune 100 company, for example, it's very important to understand what is the best category for your senior managers or executives. And clearly, if you could bring them in on an L1 and qualify them as an EB1C priority worker, that would be the fastest way for them to get a green card, because other than people born in China or India, there's no waiting line. Is that accurate, sir?
Correct. The category is current for all applicants other than those from China and India. And historically, the category has been current for those applicants and for the foreseeable future for the rest of the world, other than China and India employment first preference applicants. It should remain current.
So I said I wasn't going to get into the weeds on numbers, but because first preference has backlogged for India or China born, that waiting line from the what I can see in the current January visa bulletin is approximately 1 year. So it's not quite the end of the world. Processing a green card, approximately 1 year waiting line for China or India, but no waiting line for all the other countries. Is this correct? So if I was born in India or China, I would probably want to file quite soon, get my place in the waiting line, because it will take about a year before my priority date will come up.
Exactly. The time between the actual calendar date and the final action date, which is applied to India and China, is relatively short, and it will stay fairly consistent in the future in terms of the movement of the final action date in relation to the calendar date. And as you mentioned, for all other applicants, the category is current and should remain current for the foreseeable future.
So clearly, if I was a professor or a scientific researcher with many publications, the so-called genius visa, or coming into a senior think tank, for example, with extensive publications, then I would want to choose the EB1A or the EB1B category, which is outstanding professor or researcher with at least 3 years experience. That can be used both in a research institution and, quite frankly, in the private industry as well, provided you have at least three researchers. So EB1 is clearly the best category right now. It is wide open, other than for people born in China or India. But Charlie, what happens if, for example, I was born in China, but my spouse is born in Taiwan? I can then cross-charge to her country, so I get out of the long China waiting line and can be charged to Taiwan, right? That's possible, correct?
Yes. The one applicant would be considered the principal for deriving the preference status, the employment first preference, and the other spouse would be considered the principal applicant for chargeability, deriving the more favorable status as Taiwan, which is current.
Wow.
So you can kind of have the best of both worlds.
So this stuff is not that simple. There's quite a few different rules that you need to know, but we don't really care where your kids are born. We don't really care where your parents are born, other than if you were stateless, but we're not going to get in the weeds on that. Let's move on. So in the employment category sphere, we have five different categories. We've dealt with the first preference category. And I guess the reason why it's really oversubscribed is, quite frankly, it's very hard to qualify for. You've got to be the top of the top. You've got to be the senior manager, the outstanding professor. You can't just be a good athlete. You really have to be at the pinnacle of your career. You're not a good golfer. You're the guy who wins the competitions or at least comes near the top. So let's move on to the second preference category. Now, this one gets more complicated because this is for members of the professions holding advanced degree or persons of exceptional ability. This includes the NIW category, the PERM second preference with a master's degree or bachelor's plus 5 years of progressive experience. Now, they too get 28.6% of the worldwide preference. So if you cannot qualify for first preference, which, by the way, allows for self-petitioning under the EB1A category, you can file under the EB2 category, and there is a self-petitioning category there as well, known as the NIW or National Interest Waiver. We won't go into the weeds on that, but it's important to know that top-notch people can actually qualify without a sponsor, although, of course, they do have to prospectively benefit the U.S., so it's not like they can be hypothetically contributing. So this second preference category starts getting very confusing, and I'm going to take it together with the third preference category. Now, the third preference category is for skilled workers, professionals, and other workers. The other workers is broken down. The skilled workers, this could be for professionals, people with at least a minimum degree, or skilled workers with at least 2 years of work experience. And then you have the other worker category, which is less than 2 years of experience. So those are the two, let's call it, most popular employment-based categories. Would that be accurate, Charlie?
Yes, they could be considered, quote, your entry level. So you have more applicants applying in those categories, because, as you said, the employment first is the top bar that needs to be reached.
Got it. So these two categories together, the second preference, let's call it the master's or the exceptional ability, they get approximately 30%. And the third preference also gets approximately 30% of the 200 visas. Again, I said I don't want to get too much in the weeds on this, but let's deal with a hypothetical. I am not born in China or India. I'm born in the rest of the world. I'm looking at the second preference category. The cutoff date, the final action date is November 22. Gosh, that's not too bad right now. That's just a few months of waiting. Is that accurate, Charlie?
Yes, it is. And until recently, the rest of the world second preference date had been current, and in most recent years has been current. And this, the application of a rest of world second preference date may be a relatively short issue while they determine the demand. And even if it's not, I believe that the date, the final action date for rest of world employment second will be relatively close to the actual calendar date.
Now, Charlie, I'm really confused. We go down to the third preference category, which is supposed to be a lower category, and that one's current for rest of the world. Explain that to me, sir.
It's one reason is there could have been a backlog of petitions in the second preference category, which is being addressed. There could be increased demand by applicants. And the third preference, they were able to process many, many more of the employment third preference applicants in recent years to work off, quote, the waiting list of people that had filed. So at the current time, that is allowing the third preference rest of world date to be remain current. And again, that category, as with the employment second rest of world, has been current in most recent years.
And that's because there's been quite an extra allocation in addition to the 140, the basic 140, we got 60,000 extras, so almost 200,000. So let's just briefly touch on China and India, which, let's go with China. China currently has a June 2019 second preference priority date. If I looked at my regular calendar, I would say, well, that's 2.5 or 3 years, but that's not accurate because we're looking at the movement. So Charlie, give me a ballpark. I'm not going to hold you accountable. Give me a ballpark of what you think. If I was from China, and let's say I have a master's in computer science from Stanford University, I work at Google or Facebook, and they're sponsoring me for a green card, and I look at this, I say, well, June 2019 isn't so bad. How long is it going to take, in your opinion, approximately?
I would refer to the Chart B application filing dates and use that as the benchmark for determining how long I might be, quote, waiting for the final action on my case. Again, that application date probably being where the final action date, which would allow me to be issued my visa overseas or adjustment of status in the U.S. in approximately 8 to 12 months.
So the bottom line is, you don't see it as that bad. You see the China second preference sitting at 2.5 to 3 years. I see the Chart B is very close. My personal prediction will be a little bit longer. But then again, you're the expert. China third preference currently has an August 2018 final action date. So again, your prediction is 3, 4, 5 years for a China third pref case?
I would agree with that, just to be safe. It is always better to be pleasantly surprised in terms of the movement of the dates, because there's so many variables which can impact the movement of the final action dates.
Very helpful. So I'm going to get a little political and say what I do see as a tragedy, and I do see the suffering of the Indian nationals, because there's so many smart Indian national computer whiz kids, not to mention all the Indian second preference doctors in underserved areas and researchers and scientists, because very few of them can actually make the first preference category. So if I was born in India, and don't give me the worst prediction, I've heard you say that one. If I was born in India and I filed my green card, the current cutoff date, final action date, is October 2011. Clearly, this is more than 10 years. Wait, right? 10, 15 or more?
Yes.
Well, that's the correct answer, and we'll stick with that. Let's go to the India third preference. By the way, there's always a possibility Congress will fix it. They've had trouble. The Eagle Act came up, sadly died. It's very politically controversial. I'm not getting into that. The third preference category, that is Chinese, Indian-born professionals, seems to have a final action date of June 2012. So both of these categories seem to be almost interchangeable. Again, 15 to 20 years?
Probably so, to be a conservative estimate on that. And partly because the amount of Indian applicants who become eligible for both the third and second preference dates in comparison with applicants from the rest of the world, and the annual limits which have been applied in recent years.
So very confusing, because the second preference is 2011, the third preference 2012. That's because everybody jumped from third pref to second pref, and now second pref is more backlogged than third pref, which makes no sense. But let's not go too much in the weeds. other than to say, let's hope Congress does the right thing, because at the end of the day, they need to increase the quota. This was said in 1990 at 140,000. Thank you, President Bush Sr., for doing the right thing. It was a Republican president who did the right thing in 1990. Not one president has been able to accomplish this since. Sorry, I have to give my political thing, and the economy has grown six times, at least six times since 1990, yet we haven't increased the numbers. Stay off politics, Bernie. We're trying to get into the numbers here. But I have to say my piece because I am an immigration lawyer, and it's time for Congress to fix this. So let's move briefly, Charlie, into get off the first, second, and third. Let's move now into the other two categories. We've got the fourth preference, special immigrants. I like to refer to them as the religious worker category. Now, as of the present time, it says unavailable, but that's because Congress had to re-extend it. I won't get into the weeds on that. Generally speaking, most of these categories are current, other than El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, but I'm, again, not going to go into the weeds on that. So generally speaking, the religious workers needed to be reauthorized. I believe that was done. So that they are sort of backlogged a little, but there we're looking at June 2022. So really just about a year or so, right? Not too bad for most of the religious worker fourth preference categories. That is both ordained and non-ordained in a religious occupation or vocation. Religious occupation, vocation, of course, is a nun or priest, a nun or monk, sorry, and religious occupation, usually it's 2 years experience in an area which is primarily religious in nature. The job duties have to be primarily religious in nature in order to qualify under religious occupation, but you do not have to be ordained. So these are good categories, and I see they are pretty much wide open for every country other than Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, a little bit backlogged, but Philippines, China, and rest of the world, all with about a year or so waiting line. Is that more or less accurate, Charlie?
Yes, and again, this is a relatively recent thing where a date has been applied in past years. The category for those other than El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico had been current. Again, this may be reflective of a greater number of petitions coming to approval stage and allowing the applicants to have their cases finalized. So this will be an area to watch. But again, the final action date and calendar date are relatively in sync.
So, I mean, I mention this because, you know, America does have a strong religious foundation. And numerous religions, we don't, whether it's Christian, Hindu, Jewish, Muslim, can all qualify if they are 501c, Buddhist, Taoist, but they do have to have a formal structure. Bottom line is the religious worker category. We've done a lot of work in that area for both ordained and non-ordained religious workers' occupations, where many of the religions, of course, are global in nature. In fact, I had somebody just call me over the weekend with an emergency case in that arena. So let's move.
Sorry, one thing I would like to mention, Bernie, is this fourth preference category also covers U.S. former U.S. government employees. So an employee who had worked for a U.S. embassy or consulate or in some other capacity for a number of years can become entitled to visa this category. And again, many of those cases which were not being processed during the time that the overseas were closed or had limited processing, many of those cases are being processed now, again, putting a strain on that annual limit, and is part of the reason for the implementation of a date on a worldwide basis.
Well, those, of course, are the special immigrant visas and people who've served the interests of the U.S. I don't even like to use the word strain because they have served America
right.
Well, but by strain, you mean technically.
Technically, in terms of the amount of applicants versus the annual limit, again, many of those applicants who had worked at the embassies or consulates could have been processed and were in, for visas and at times when the embassies and consulates were closed. Now that they're reopening, those applicants can be processed, but they're getting charged against this year's annual limit versus could have been processed over a period of number of years.
Well, let's hope that Congress does the right thing on the Afghans and does an amendment. It didn't pass this year, but I understand the administration's pushing it. Let's move into fifth preference. This is the high net worth employment creation. Of course, it's often known as the investor visa category. At the moment, the minimum investment amount is $800,000. If you are in a rural targeted employment or infrastructure project through a regional center, or $1 million in a non-regional center case, and there you have to create at least 10 full-time jobs. So that's why I call it the employment creation category rather than the investor category. But the bottom line is there's a fifth preference category. Now, we basically have two categories. We have the old unreserved category, which is, I guess, in March 2022, President Biden signed RIA, which is the Reform and Integrity Act, which was much needed to, let's say, update the EB-5 program. A lot of consumer protection in there. It's a good bill, generally speaking. There is one unfair part, and that is that the Chinese nationals stuck in the waiting line, unfortunately, 32% of the visas are now allocated for special set-aside categories. So we have the fifth preference unreserved category. Now there's no waiting line still for every country except China and India. China is stuck at March 2015. India is stuck at November 2019. The Chinese waiting line has been moving terribly slowly. It's quite frankly shocking. And the India cutoff date is November 2019. So they've got a few years wait. Any comments on those two or on the old unreserved category, sir?
Yes, as you mentioned, this category historically has been bringing in over $1.5 billion in investments into the U.S. economy. You mentioned the direct hiring, but if you include also indirect hiring, the indirect jobs are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of indirect jobs are also created each year by this program. Both the China and India dates are reflective of basically a backlog of processing by the petitions by the Investment Program Office. And these, both China and India, had large amounts of applicants who were filing in the early years. Unfortunately, their petitions were not being processed in a timely manner. And now with the changes in the limits, it's causing, for the lack of a better word, a problem in terms of moving these final action dates.
Well, it is shocking.
And it is, as you said, it is unfair to these applicants that their cases were not being processed in a timely manner when larger amounts of numbers were available to these applicants.
Yeah, unfortunately, I know in fiscal 21, approximately 16,000 EB-5 visas were wasted, but we won't get into the weeds on that today. That's probably another topic. But so we have the unreserved categories. Now let's talk about the new categories. So here's the surprising and quite frankly, very pleasant option is that Congress created new set aside or reserve categories. And we have three reserved categories. We have the rural set aside. So that is population under 20,000 with rural designation. We have the high unemployment, the old TEA, 150% of the national average. And then we have 2% allocated to infrastructure projects. But this brand new program, and I believe you're going to be speaking on that very soon. And just to give a little plug in case people see this, we're going to do a full in-depth program on January the 10th, 2023, where we will discuss the EB-5 program exclusively and in depth. And then I believe, Charlie, you are going to do yet another program with my partner, Sharina Garcia, on January the 18th, talking about employment visa movement for corporations, basically for companies, because these are pretty much all employer-sponsored visas. So human resources need to understand these categories. But in the meantime, Charlie, this is just amazing. So if I come from China or India and I invest $800,000, there is literally no waiting line for the next few months at least. Whether you choose rural, high unemployment, or infrastructure, rural may be best because it's got twice as many, but the high unemployment's open as well. So this is, quite frankly, the best opportunity I have seen for Chinese or Indian nationals for many years to take advantage of and get a green card for themselves and their family. Is that more or less accurate?
Yes, it's 100% true. If I were filing in either the rural or the high unemployment, I would do so. I think that these categories are, you want to file as quickly as possible so that you are at the very front of the visa line of when your case can be processed to conclusion. And I would not be surprised if these categories, the final action dates, remain current throughout fiscal 2023.
Well,
so again, it's
amazing.
Very important for applicants to file as quickly as possible. You always want to be at the front of the visa lines based on your filing.
And you get your ticket in the waiting line when you submit your application. So that is invaluable for high net worth individuals throughout the world. Now, Charlie, one other thing that happens with this law is that President Biden signed this RIA in March 2022, which actually allows for concurrent filing. Now, I'm not going to get in the weeds too much, but if you are legally in the United States on an H or L visa, O visa, maybe E visa, possibly even a visitor's visa, as long as you didn't have intent at the time you entered, but that's tricky. But the bottom line is that there are circumstances where you can do a concurrent EB-5 filing together with an adjustment of status. You get a work permit after a few months, a travel permit after a few months. And this is literally a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the Chinese who've been backlogged and the Indians who are currently backlogged. Maybe also be beneficial for the Vietnamese who have been traditionally backlogged, the three biggest countries in EB-5. So we have a very unique opportunity right now under this new law, and it seems to me a lot of people don't know about this. Is this a good summary, Charlie?
Yes, it is. I'm very glad that you brought up this concurrent filing situation. It does provide a unique opportunity for any Chinese applicants who are legally in the U.S. and qualify, because the vast majority of Chinese applicants were processed overseas at Guangzhou in the past. So again, this provides them with a very unique opportunity, whether they're Chinese, Indian, or any applicants, to be able to be processed in the U.S.
Well, Charlie, today's presentation, I hope, will be very valuable for employers seeking to sponsor foreign nationals in occupations which are in short supply, very valuable for research, scientific institutions seeking to hire the best and the brightest under employment-based first preference with more or less open categories, allows for HR to plan accordingly for second and third preference, the master's and the bachelor's degree categories, for religious organizations to plan the movement of religious workers, monks, nuns, ordained, unordained. And then finally, for the rich and famous, and really you could be rich or you could be famous as an athlete or an actor, scratch that, famous as an actor would be EB1. This is just for the rich, not for the famous. Is the EB5 category, getting carried away with myself here. High net worth individuals, but there are other requirements that I want to make very clear. US doesn't like money laundering, doesn't like dirty money, so we do have to show that the money is clean, that the money is lawfully earned. This is more burdensome than people realize. You can't touch dirty money. You better not touch dirty money. And then, of course, whether it's direct or indirect, you have to prove that those jobs will be created, because this is a job creation program and the money is at risk if the jobs are not created or the business fails. So you've got to do your due diligence. EB5 is a fantastic opportunity, but don't just dive in with your eyes closed, because you could end up losing your money and possibly not get your green card. So you definitely need to do due diligence, understand what you're doing before you make that kind of investment. Charlie, today's presentation, I hope, will help people understand the basics. The visa bulletin can be obtained at travel.state.gov in the middle of every month. Our firm, WR Immigration, will be doing webinars around the middle of every month, commenting on the visa bulletin. The next one again will be on January the 18th, 2023. We will have another one in February, March, April, updating everybody on EB5, on all the categories. For EB5, we will do a specialized one on January the 10th. And I thank you all for joining us today. It's truly been a pleasure. And Charlie, thank you for being available. I know you recently retired from the State Department, so thank you for sharing this current information. I think our listeners will find it very informative.
Thank you for listening to the WR Immigration Podcast. We hope you found this enjoyable. If you have further questions, please reach out to us at visalaw@wolfsdorf.com.